NMB Productions presents The Dark Room.
The name is Frank Caulfield. I was a self-made businessman and a pretty successful one at that. Until today, I was one of the most respected business icons in this thriving metropolis they call the Big Apple. But, like so many before me, I was dealt a hand that I never expected to get. Come on, allow me the small favor of telling you the whole story. It all started this morning on my way to the office. I had read about an exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art called The Dark Room, and I wanted to see it without too many people around. I have to tell you, I hate crowds. Always have. Anyway, I purposely left home a little late so I'd get to the museum just after it opened. As I rounded the corner near the massive front entrance, I saw him sitting there on the ground, his clothes tattered and torn, dried blood on his head, his filthy, scraggly gray hair sticking to his face. A bum. A panhandler. One of society's dregs. I've never liked them. Never had any use for them. People like me, we had to struggle to make it. We risked everything, and above all, we chose not to end up on the streets. To me, these people were a constant reminder of what could happen if I didn't apply myself and succeed.
It's not too late to change.
Leave me alone.
You're mine.
With that, he got up and started after me. I shot him a nasty look as I quickened my pace. I shouldn't have looked at him at all. It had never happened with any other street person before. I never saw their eyes, but this time I did. I saw them clearly, even if only for a split second. They were eyes of steel. Cold, painful, hard. They were the eyes of a struggling soul, and they seemed to be struggling to look deep inside me. I was feeling intensely afraid all of a sudden. I broke into a run.
Wait!
He was running after me, the stupid idiot. Couldn't he take no for an answer? I was sure he was going to kill me. I saw the entrance to the museum up ahead. I ran faster. The panhandler seemed to be just behind me now.
Listen to me!
Help! Police! I felt his hand on my shoulder as I grabbed for the museum door. I let out a scream, I'm sure, as I turned to face him.
Don't go in there! Listen to me!
I slapped his hand away from me and pushed him. He fell down on his back, and just then the museum doorman came to my rescue. He subdued the panhandler and pinned him to the ground. One of New York's finest came on the scene and took over. I was shaken. My heart was pounding. I had never been accosted like that. The doorman approached me.
You okay, sir?
Fine, thank you. The cop dragged the bum away. He kept screaming at me to listen to him. I was glad the cop had shown up. I nodded my thanks to the doorman and entered the museum. My heart was having trouble slowing down. I leaned against a wall to catch my breath, and the doorman came in and found me there.
Excuse me, sir. The officer wants to know if you intend to press charges.
I should. That kind of behavior is unacceptable. No, I won't bother. He was probably just drunk out of his mind.
I'll tell the officer. You just enjoy your visit, sir.
Thank you. The museum was overwhelming to me. Paintings and modern sculptures filled the otherwise huge expanse. I leaned on the wall for a short while, seeing if I could spy a sign that would lead me to the dark room. I saw no such sign. Just then, one of the museum employees approached me and asked me if I was all right. I explained what had happened, and he led me to the exhibit afterwards.
Well, this is it.
Doesn't look like much.
You can open that door and go inside. That's the whole idea. The real exhibit is inside. If you ask me, I don't get it. But then again, I don't go for all this modern art. If you need anything, I'll be at guest services.
Thanks. It looked like a big blue box with a doorway stuck right in the middle of it. A small white placard on the door read, The Dark Room. I opened the door and went inside. The walls were the same deep blue as the outside, and the only piece of furniture was a single, white, hardwood chair, again stuck right in the middle of the room. Aside from an old-fashioned brownie-type camera mounted on one wall, there was nothing else in the room, and as I looked up, I noticed that the ceiling was also the same barren, deep blue color. I was just about to leave this silly exhibit when a thought came to me. Sit in the chair. I guess that's what the artist wanted me to do, so I sat. No sooner had I sat down than the camera flashed and the chair started to move. It turned slowly, the sound of gears grinding, all the way around until I was facing the same wall again. Then it stopped. That was it. I sat there for a minute, waiting for something else to happen. Nothing did. So after a few minutes more, I got up and left the museum, disappointed. Good morning, Joan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Caulfield. How was the exhibit?
Joan Kelly was the best secretary I'd ever had. She was the only secretary I'd ever had. Bright, cheery, and very organized. I couldn't have become the success I was without her. Well, it was just a room, Joan. A big blue room. A waste of time and money, if you ask me.
That's too bad.
Maybe I would have gotten into it more if I hadn't been attacked.
Attacked? What do you mean? Are you all right?
Oh, I'm fine, Joan, fine. Some beggar on the street asked me for money, and I guess he was drunk out of his mind or something. So I walked past him, and he chased me right to the museum door.
That's terrible.
I don't know. Maybe he was on his last legs. Maybe I should have thrown him some change. Who knows? Maybe he wouldn't have been satisfied with just change.
I'll fix you a nice hot cup of coffee.
Thanks, Joan. Any calls?
Everything's on your desk, Mr. Caulfield, and... Oh, I should tell you that Gary is expecting your call. He phoned 3 times this morning about your meeting this afternoon. He seemed very antsy.
Thanks again, Joan. I'll deal with Gary. He's nervous about the merger, that's all.
I'll get that coffee now.
You know?
What?
Maybe I should have just thrown him some change after all.
It's all over, Mr. Caulfield. If it didn't happen to you, it would have happened to someone else. Don't take that sort of thing personally, okay?
I'll give Gary a call.
You do that. I'll be back in a minute.
I couldn't get the whole event out of my mind. It was a part of every thought I entertained. I sat at my desk, going through Joan's notes and details about my afternoon meeting, and still I couldn't focus. I knew I had to break this mood if I was to have a successful meeting. I decided to call Gary. But no sooner had he answered the phone than I was telling him the whole story.
You're kidding?
No, and to make matters worse, I can't shake it. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal, was it?
Hey, it was traumatic. Anything traumatic takes a while to get over. You're only human, Frank.
I know.
Okay, see you at 4?
Sharp. And don't be nervous about this deal. Kruger knows there's no option. It's as good as done.
Good to hear, Frank. I know you won't let me down.
The next few hours seemed to fly by. I was supposed to be going over notes and forms. And when Joan buzzed me on the intercom, I was shocked to notice that it was 3:50 p.m. And I had been sitting there thinking of that stupid beggar the entire afternoon.
Gary's here, Mr. Caulfield. Should I send him in?
Just give me a minute, Joan.
Okay.
I tried to make it look like I had been going through the files all afternoon by splaying them all over the desk. I felt horribly unprepared, and I only hoped that Gary wouldn't catch on.
You decent?
Gary, come on in. I was just...
You were just about to clean up, I hope. Kruger's gonna be here in like 10 minutes.
Don't worry about a thing, Gary. He's habitually 15 minutes late. Besides, a messy desk is a good sign.
If you say so.
Don't worry so much, Gary. I told you, it's in the bag.
You keep saying that, Frank, like you're trying to convince me of something that isn't gonna happen.
Gary, please, look. We have time for a coffee. Would you like one?
Got anything stronger?
Not before a meeting. Not in this office.
Frank, level with me.
Sure.
Do you know this stuff? I mean, really know it? Are you ready for this?
Gary. Yes?
Mr. Kruger on line 1.
Kruger?
Thanks, I'll take it. Hello, Mr. Kruger. Pleasure to hear from you, sir.
Mr. Caulfield.
Mr. Price is here. We're ready to talk business. Say, is there anything you'd like for the meeting, Mr. Kruger? Fruit plate? Anything?
I'm pulling the plug.
What?
What is it?
I'm sorry, I don't think I caught that.
You heard me, Mr. Caulfield. The deal is off. I was having second thoughts, so I called my lawyer in. We're looking elsewhere. I'm sorry, but I have to do this. Goodbye.
What is he saying?
Sure, I understand, Mr. Kruger. Blame it on the weather. You know, it changes so much this time of year. You're bound to catch something. No problem, Mr. Kruger. We can reschedule. Sure, I'll have Joan get in touch with your secretary next week. Okay then. Take care of yourself. Goodbye.
He bailed, didn't he?
What?
He's sick? Is he sick? What's the problem?
Yes, he's sick. He can't make the meeting. We'll try again next week.
I thought there was a time limit on this deal, Frank. You know, I have everything riding on this.
Don't worry about it. Next week, okay? Next week. I had never lied to anyone like this, ever. I just couldn't bring myself to expose the truth to Gary. I was standing there with him, looking right at him, and I knew he was now financially ruined. But I couldn't say that to him. He was a friend. His wife was a friend, too, and his kids... I played with Gary's kids in their home. They were going to lose that home now. Gary was a friend who trusted my advice that we should deal with Mr. Kruger. And now, this. I felt sick. I actually thought I was going to be ill in front of Gary. I don't remember what I said to get him to leave, but he left. I collapsed in my chair and wept like a baby. and I felt frightened, just like I had felt that morning with the beggar. And then I thought, maybe I should have given him some spare change after all. The next day, I avoided going into the office. I was sitting at Maxwell's having a coffee when Joan reached me on my cell phone.
Mr. Caulfield, I think you'd better call Gary. He is furious.
About what?
He says that he called Mr. Kruger to wish him well, and found out that he canceled the deal. Kruger told him that he told you yesterday when he called. Is that what happened?
Joan, listen carefully. It's Kruger's word against mine. And Gary doesn't know who's telling the truth. Do me a favor. Call Gary back and tell him this whole thing was a big misunderstanding. Tell him that we only found this out today. Tell him that I called Kruger on this just now. Please, act like you don't know any different.
I don't know if I can do that, Mr. Caulfield. It's not right.
Joan, I have never asked you for a favor of this magnitude before. Please, call Gary like I asked. I'll figure something out in the meantime. Joan, will you call him?
I have another call coming in, sir. Maybe you should get over here as soon as possible.
Joan? Joan! Oh, Lord. Why is this happening to me? I rushed back to the office to find Joan packing her things into a large cardboard box. I was simply stunned. What are you doing?
I'm leaving.
Why? Because of this whole Kruger deal? It wasn't my fault, Joan. I didn't cancel anything.
No, you didn't, Mr. Caulfield. But you lied to Gary. And what's worse, you asked me to lie for you. I cannot and will not work under those conditions.
Oh, for goodness sake, Joan, give me a break. It's business.
In all my years with you, it has never been that kind of business. Honestly, I would never have expected this from you. I'm sorry, Frank, but you're on your own.
She grabbed her things and slipped out of the office as if she were only visiting. 20 years of loyal service. Over, just like that. And all because I had asked her to lie for me. For the second time in 2 days, I sat at my desk and cried. What was the matter with me? Why was my world falling apart at the seams? I still couldn't focus. Couldn't think of why this was happening. And every once in a while, the thought occurred to me. Maybe I should have just given that beggar a few lousy dollars after all. Well, the next few days were very hard for me, trying to run the office and handle 2 jobs. I thought that the worst had passed, but it was just about to get messy. The day itself was bright and sunny. The view from my office was as it had been for 20 years. Incredible. When the phone rang for the millionth time, I was going to let the service answer, when I had a sudden urge to pick it up myself. Frank Caulfield speaking.
Did you hear the news?
Joan, are you okay? Look, if you can't find work, don't think twice about coming back. I take you back in a heartbeat, you know that.
It was just on the radio. Gary hung himself. I can't believe it.
I couldn't speak. Couldn't say sorry. Couldn't say anything.
I just thought you should know. Goodbye.
I couldn't even say goodbye. The room started to spin, and all I remember was my head hitting the desk so hard I heard a crack. When I awoke, it must have been days later. At least that's what it felt like. I ran my hands over my beard, and there was too much growth for just one day. And there was blood on my desk. Not a lot, but enough to scare me. Then I remembered that my friend Gary was dead, and suddenly my bleeding head meant nothing. I felt like such a different person now, not the successful business tycoon I was. I felt like a man continually haunted by terror and misfortune, and in reality, that is what I had become. But why? I still couldn't place the time it all changed. Then I remembered the panhandler. I tried to imagine things being different had I only given him some money. Was that it? Did I finally ignore one of the less fortunate that I changed the cosmic order of events to turn on me? Was that possible? Then I remembered the dark room, the camera, and the chair. That stupid white chair in the middle of that dark blue room. Did the chain of events become altered when I turned around in that chair? What about when the camera flashed? Was that it? Suddenly I became focused. Focused like I had not been since the incident. That must have been it. That room. Instantly, I knew what I had to do. I had to get back into that chair. It sounded nuts, even to me, but that had to be the answer. I got up and looked at myself in the mirror. I looked a mess, especially with that patch of dried blood on my head. I grabbed my things and headed out of the building. It didn't matter what I looked like. I had to get into that room before everything collapsed. I ran out of the office like there was no tomorrow. I was convinced that if I didn't sit in that chair and turn around again, I'd be dead before nightfall. Perhaps I could reverse everything. Maybe time would be altered, and even Gary would be alive again. I punched the elevator button and couldn't wait. I ran down 30 flights of stairs, faster than I've ever run in my life. At the main level, I threw the door open and ran into the lobby. There were people everywhere, most of them coming into work for the day. As I ran towards the glass doors to outside, a voice called my name. I stopped so hard I almost tripped myself, and then spun around. It was Emily Price, Gary's wife. I wanted to go to her, to hold her and tell her how awful I felt. But I knew that if I got to that room in time, maybe she'd have her husband back. So I turned toward the door instead, and ran. I could hear her screaming my name, and it hurt to run away from her. I almost got hit twice as I dodged traffic. I was running like a madman, trying desperately to save my life and almost losing it in the process. Then, up ahead, I saw it. The Museum of Modern Art. I made my way to the front doors and was blocked by the doorman.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't come in here. Go away. Go beg somewhere else.
You don't understand. I need to get in there.
No, sir. You don't understand.
He shoved me so hard I fell backwards onto the concrete. I lay there for a minute and then crawled over to sit by the wall of the museum. I had to figure out a way to get past the doorman. No explanation would do it. He was right in assuming I was a beggar. I sure looked the part. I sat there watching people pass left to right and right to left, and for the first time in my life, I was looking at all the wealthy walk by as they ignored me. I was seeing the panhandler's plight firsthand. I finally understood how it must feel for those poor people to be treated like they're invisible. I made a vow then to never think twice about helping those in need. And that's when the thought occurred to me again, one last time. What would have happened if I only gave that beggar a few lousy dollars? The people were passing by so quickly that my head began to spin. I had to concentrate on getting into the museum. Just then I looked up, and the moment froze, as if a still picture had just been taken. There he was, clean cut, well dressed, successful, walking briskly towards the museum, oblivious of the fact that I was sitting here looking at him. He looked into my eyes for a brief second, and I knew that he was me. It was the room after all. I knew that now. There I was, watching myself going to the museum, and I had to stop me. I had to speak clearly as he passed me, but my lips were dry and cracked and my tongue was pasted to the roof of my mouth.
It's not too late to change your mind.
Leave me alone.
Don't go in there. Listen to me.
Help! Police! He began to run. I ran after him. I couldn't take no for an answer. He reached for the museum door. I was right behind him now.
Don't go in there. Listen to me.
I put my hand on his shoulder as he grabbed for the museum door. He let out a scream as he turned to face me.
Listen to me.
He slapped my hand away from him and pushed me. I fell down on my back, and just then the museum doorman came to his rescue. He subdued me and pinned me to the ground. One of New York's finest came on the scene and took over. I was being beaten, and I could do nothing to stop it. I kept yelling at myself over and over again.
It's not too late to change your mind. Listen to me.
It was no use. I saw myself enter the museum and I knew that the cycle was continuing. I watched the doorman speak to myself behind the glass doors of the museum as I was being dragged away. And I couldn't help thinking, what would have happened if he had just given me a few lousy dollars?
You've just heard The Dark Room, written for radio by Norman Michael Burketta, and starring Harvey Chartrand as Frank Coffey, Kim Urshatz as Joan Kelly, and Jamie Douglas as Gary Price. Additional voices and original music by Norman Michael Burketta, taken from the album Technopark, also featuring Jamie Douglas and Jim Young. Recorded and mastered at NMB Productions, Ottawa, Canada.